Good afternoon. It's good to be here. And if I was to give an introduction line for myself, I'm not sure what I would say. But I love the Lord Jesus, and I want to live for him. And I hope that this weekend can be an inspiration to us. I believe we have a group of believers here. We have young people that I can look at you and appreciate. And a lot of you, I remember when you were a lot littler than you are now. and we have parents that are raising babies, and we have, quite a few marriages represented here, and number of grandparents. So I think I hope that all of us can leave this place with just a new determination. I don't believe there's going to be anybody that just completely was going the wrong way and turns around and say, okay, I am going to do right now. I have confidence that we want to do what's right. But it'll be okay if we're humble enough to say, you know what, there's a few adjustments I need to make. And I hope that can happen. These subjects show the seasons of life, and of course we can look at each other and see that we're changing seasons, right? I haven't seen you all for quite some time, some of you, and I see the season change, and I wouldn't be surprised you think of that when you look up here. But these subjects are dear to my heart, and I'm passionate about it. And if you fall asleep, I'll try to wake you up. And if you think about something else, as Brother was talking about, that I don't know what I can do about that. But the decisions that we make in these seasons determine destiny. Did we hear that? The decisions that we make in these seasons determine destiny. Youth, you won't accidentally make it to heaven. It's not going to be by you just had an accident and somehow you wound up in heaven. It's going to be with determination, putting your heart into it. And parents, you won't raise children for the Lord just by accident and just letting things kind of flop around and go however they want while the children are growing up. You won't accidentally raise children for the Lord, or you won't accidentally have good marriages. Life is about work. It's about making right choices. Grandparenting seems to be the reaping of a lifetime. And there are things that I think make good grandparents and things that don't. But in a lot of ways, the things when we get to our age, it's going to be a reaping of what has been. And I would be the first to confess to you and acknowledge that in all these seasons of life, I didn't always get good grades, and I'm not trying to be here to you and present like I was a good little young boy, and I'm always the husband I should have been, and I did just right on our children. No, it's a learning process, and I made mistakes, so I don't want to come across. All I want to do is point you the right way and give some things that I think I've learned. And to try to help you to determine, yes, I want to do what's right. I want to be the young person, the parent, the marriage partner that God wants me to be. So I hope that everyone here is encouraged in whatever stage of life you're in. I was wondering, I always like to have theme songs, but I know it's just a real short time. There was a song that I knew when I was just a youngster. And for years and years, it kind of like nobody ever sang it until just a couple of years ago, we resurrected it at our summer Bible school. It's a simple little song. And maybe y'all know it. I am determined and I've made up my mind. I will serve the Lord. I've left the world and its pleasures behind. I will serve the Lord. Does anybody know it? We got one back there that does. Hey, if you help Aunt Sarah and I, we'll have a trio here. Because I want y'all to learn it. I want you to take it home. We got it in Dublin now where you can hear the children just coming out with it. And it's a good song. Okay, y'all gonna help me? I am determined and I've made up my mind. I will serve the Lord. I've left the world and its pleasures behind. I will serve the Lord. I'll follow wherever he leads me. I'll pasture wherever he feeds me, for I am determined and I've made up my mind. I will serve the Lord. Now, if I think about it, or if somebody wants to help me between services this afternoon, I can give you the words. I did write them down, and you can put them on this board, and so that everybody can learn it. Okay, that's enough for this time, but I will try to sing it again. And next time, I think you'll be able to do a little more. Okay, want to talk to the youth this afternoon? When I think of youth, I think of soils. I'm a farmer, and I like to study the soils and think about the soils and what it's going to take to improve the soil so that we can grow better crops. And the soils are like our hearts. Our hearts have, sometimes have some hard places and rocky and weedy, and then there's the good ground. And the good news is that soils can be changed. And if you make it spiritually, it's because you put heart and soul into caring for the soil of your heart. And I hope that you're careful about not letting the seed that's sown fall on the thorns. You know what the thorns do? They come up and they choke out everything else, and the fruit from the crop is just not there. Timothy, 1 Timothy 4, Paul wrote to Timothy and he said, "Let no man despise your youth." Now that's a different word than what we normally use the word despise. He said, don't let anybody belittle your youth, look down on you. But he says, get your examples from the believers. Now, I just paraphrase that. I guess you could say that Sims Standard Version. But get your example from the believers. And be an example for others. I also was impressed with the account of Jesus casting out devils. And in the man from Gadara. You remember how Jesus crossed the lake and he went over to the Gadarenes and he went to the cemetery. And I believe, I wouldn't be surprised that was his purpose in going because of this man. And there was a man there that lived in that cemetery. And he was, if you just imagine a little bit, this man was, he didn't have any clothes on. He was uncontrollable. He went around just hollering and shouting. He was out of his mind. And the people would set traps for him. And it sounds like occasionally they caught him. I don't know what kind of traps they used, but they would trap him and catch him. And he would just tear the chains and he would cut himself. He was bleeding. He was yelling. He was hollering. And Jesus went to this man. And this man that would always run from everybody else. Well, the people would bypass. They didn't want to go through that cemetery because they knew who was there. But when this man saw Jesus, he came to Jesus. Isn't that wonderful? I just love that picture. This man who was the wild man who would cut himself and holler and yell and just, he was just horrible. He came to Jesus and he worshiped. He worshiped Jesus. Well, somebody ran to town. People in town heard it. This is in Luke 5, if you want to read it sometime. They ran to town and told the people, and they came out, and they found this man and Jesus together. And this man was three things. He was sitting. He was clothed. And he was in his right mind. Now, what do these things signify? You're all seated here. I see people that are at rest. You get in the house and you sit down at rest. This man who was, all the description I'd given, here he was at rest. He had clothes on. That speaks of respect and dignity. We're going to talk about that just a little more later. But here was this man who had no dignity at all, no shame. And here he was, clothing. Have you ever wondered where Jesus got the clothes? I don't know. He might have, you know, Jesus, he could have just had clothes. Or he could have said, you know what, I'm going to take some along. This man's going to need them. But anyway, there he was, seated, looking respectful with dignity. And in his right mind, able to use judgment and reason. So important things for all of us, but youth, I'm talking to y'all this afternoon, to be at rest with respect and dignity and able to use judgment and reason. I think these are utmost important in the journey that we're on to become productive, mature, socially adjusted, godly adults. At rest, learn to be able to sit still, enjoying home. Not necessary to be going all the time. Clothed. Your clothing says so much about you. It reveals the inside. Using judgment and reason. And we'll talk about some of these things later. I would like for our young people to turn to Proverbs 3. Everybody can turn. But I want the young people to turn to it and stand and read verses 1 through 7. Proverbs 3. I see Solomon in this book writing, and he says, I think it's about 10 times in the book, he said, my son, my son. I like that term. I see a sense of endearment there. I see a sense of a father who wants to pass something on that's very important, a closeness in relationship. My son, I want to tell you something. And that's how I feel about you young people today. I just want to share with you, and hopefully it'll be something that you can gain. Would you please stand? Proverbs chapter 3, read 1 through 7. My son, thank you. You may be seated. Such truth in these verses. Promises that God has made. I'd like to put emphasis on several verses before I begin to tell you things that I think are important to you. I have 9 things listed today. But I want you to take this passage. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, and in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will take into consideration about directing your path. Is that what it says? He'll think about it. Is that what He says? No, He says He shall. And I want to tell you, when God says I will, it's done. He will. But we have a condition there. Trust Him with all our heart. Don't lean on our own understanding. Don't be wise in our own eyes. Fear the Lord. Depart from evil. And I want you to consciously think about this, committing your way to God. Right now, today, tomorrow, the next day. In all your ways. How many is that? Is that pretty many of your ways? All your ways acknowledge Him. Ah, not when I'm going to buy a pickup. I don't need to worry about, do I? In all your ways acknowledge Him. What about when you think about a life's companion? Go to God for everything in life. When you have a problem, learn to go to God. And just ask Him, Jesus, what do you want me to do? What would bring honor and glory to your name? I consider this, if you master that, learning to take everything to God, all your decisions that you need to make, and getting His input and be open to Him, we could probably just go on home. We could just stop right now. I wouldn't need to tell you the rest. But I have 9 things I want to tell you, young people, that I think are important, and I don't have them down in any particular order. I'm glad to see pens and paper, and I'm glad to see young men with pens and paper. Usually when I go away, the girls are taking notes and the boys don't, and I don't know why that is. And I don't say that to shame the boys. I say it to thank the girls. But I'm glad to see that we got some boys here taking notes, because when we get finished, you ever have tests? Do y'all do tests in school? But I would like to know that you got the points. And the first one I have is be respectful. Things that I think are very important for youth. Be respectful. And some of these things, it's hard to just talk to you because the ones in the back need to get started when they're, and we'll talk about that later on tonight. But be respectful. And respect starts when the children are little, real young. But the good thing is, if you missed it back then, you can still get it now. We can have a makeup class, right? How children treat their toys tells a lot about their respect for property, how they care for things. But children are learning about respect. How youth drive vehicles. Maybe I should look over on this side. Y'all drive okay? How you drive your vehicles shows either respect or disrespect on multiple levels. How we talk. How you interact with people in town. Do you hold the door open if you're going in, get gas or whatever? You see an elderly person. Do you speak? Thank you, please. How are you today? Those kind of things. Even the way you dress speaks of respect or disrespect for authority. And I could go too long on this one. I was raised in the 60s, born in the 50s, and so I remember well the 60s, and it was probably the most awful, as far as morals going down in the country. The 60s was probably about the worst decade, they tell us. There was, and there's so many things, I don't know what to say without getting too, going in it too deep. But there were so many things involved that brought that to be. And I think just briefly was like women had gone to work with World War II. TV had just come in. Elvis Presley made his hit in the 50s. And then they had the Beatles in the 60s and the hippie movement right behind it. And when it was all about, you know, rebellion against established authority. They were tired of this system where there was wealth, extreme. A lot of the hippies were from wealthy parents that had just nice, high, plush properties, but there was nothing there that was satisfying. There was a discontent. And so they just threw all that out and took to the streets. And they dressed, I don't know how to tell you, except like the hippies. And the hair grow long, and it was everything righted all up psychedelic, and it was all about free love, and nothing mattered. Well, that's a tremendous example of disrespect. But later it hit us more as the grunge look, which is studied dishevelment. In other words, figure out how you dress down. We were always taught, you dress up. We dress up to go to church. Whatever your Sunday clothes, your best clothes, that's what you wear for, you know, if we were in a poor country where we didn't have anything but just clean work clothes, that would be your best work clothes with what we would wear for church. We dress up. But this other one is see how you can dress down. And so our society, you can drive through town and you can see people that just look awful with the way their hair's not kept and the pants are dragging down and all that dressing down. It shows gross disrespect. So I'm saying, young people, one of the greatest testimonies for Christ is when young people are respectful. It tells volumes about you. It tells volumes about what you were taught and volumes about the group you represent and volumes about the Lord you serve. And if you go to town and you look like, you know, you would really have a hero over here in the world, and you want his clothes on and shirt tails are flapping with a shirt that maybe should have been given to little brother a long time ago, it tells something completely different. All right, respect. Respect your parents. Bible says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. God made a promise. You respect your parents. What did he say? That it may be well with you and that you will live long on the earth. I can't overemphasize the need to respect your parents. I didn't make that promise. I didn't attach it to it. That's what God said. And I know that we grow up and we get to the place where we feel like, well, I'm grown now. I can think on my own, and Dad just doesn't understand. I'm going to tell you, Dad probably understands a lot better than you think he does. He wasn't long ago. He was where you are. And you grow up, and I know that it gets to the place where you get up, I know especially some of you boys, big as you are, it's like two men in the house now. But I'm going to tell you, one of them is your dad. One of them is your mom. Maybe two women in the house. But respect. So soon, you'll be at the place where your dad is now. And then you'll be the one responsible. And you'll have somebody coming up that you're bringing up. So respect your parents. And I would say, too, that respect your parents even if they are not really what they should be. Not all parents are godly parents, I understand. But if you can respect the authority that's over you, treat them with respect. God said it'll be well with you. All right, that's the first one, be respectful. Number two is to learn to discipline yourself. I enjoy talking about this one. Learn to discipline yourself. And when you learn this, others don't have to do it for you. And I like to think about there are ways you can tell when children are growing up. And sometimes I like the smiles I see when I tell people this. And sometimes the smiles come from the moms and they say, oh boy, I'm glad somebody else is telling them. But you can tell when somebody's growing up. In the morning when they know what time it is to get up, they have an alarm clock. And they don't have to be told, Susie, get up. I don't know what names to call people. I get in trouble when I start doing that because there might be a Susie here. I tried Shorty and there was a Shorty there, and I don't want to try Junior. He may be here. And so anyway, but when you get big enough that when you know what time you need to get up because you have things to do so that you can go to work or go to school or whatever it is, and you set your alarm and you get up and nobody has to tell you, fix the bed. Clean up your room. Hurry up. We need to go. Breakfast is about ready. You know, when you get to where you know, that's all I'm saying is that you can tell when a person has learned to discipline themselves. Nobody has to keep hurrying you along for chores. I could ask you, do you think big people always feel like going to work and cooking breakfast and I want to tell you, discipline is mastering your feelings. Mastering your feelings. And I'll assure you, if you get 70 years old, there'll still be some things you don't feel like doing. But you're going to have to learn to master the feelings. And the sooner you do it, the better off you'll be. And do what you know needs to be done. Doing because you know it's the right thing and it needs to be done. You're going to need to, if you're in school, you're going to need to go to school, whether you're going to have to keep being prodded or whether you learn to go ahead. And so learn to discipline yourselves. You will not always feel like reading your Bible, right? You won't always just feel like praying and talking to the Lord. But usually when we don't feel like doing some of these things is the time that we need it the most. Master your feelings. That's what discipline is. Jesus didn't always feel like doing what he needed to do. When he went to the garden to pray, he said, oh, Father, please let this cup pass from me. He didn't feel like going through with it at all. And he went two more times. Take this cup away, but your will be done. So learn to do what is right, even when you don't feel like it. And once you are a self-starter, your boss won't need to be a crank. All right, number three, we had respect. Learn to discipline yourselves. Number three is to be a good steward. A steward is one who has been entrusted with another's goods. Now let me ask you, who owns the world? Oh, that's a kindergarten question. I could ask the little boy beside Matthew there, and he would know he has the answer, but we're a little scared to say, aren't we? God owns the world, right? The whole world. Okay. Who owns what you have? What's in your pocket? What you drive? Who owns that? Oh, that's my pickup, right? That's my sewing machine, my dress. I don't know what all, but that's mine. I want to remind you that God is the owner of everything. The farm that we live on, it's just loaned to me for a little period of time. I'll be gone and it'll still be God's. It'll still be there. It's His. The question is, are you a steward? I think if we remember that everything is God's, it will be a big help. I like to think about stewardship, we can get a little picture of it, of stewardship. If you would tell your little brother, if you give him a $20 bill, and you tell him to, now you take care of this, and you make sure that you're a good steward of it. Spend it wisely. Remember the needs, and you could preach him a little sermon, you know. And somehow he slipped over, and I'm just going to say Dollar General. And he found all the plastic toys, the cheapest, old, sorriest things, and he got $20 worth. And he brought it back to you all excited about what all he had. That's a pretty easy one to figure out. That was not a good steward. That was just wasteful, wasn't it? But I wonder from God's perspective, how it looks to Him with what we do with the $20, the multiple $20 that He gives to us. I remember, and I say this to my shame, but I remember giving a man a little money. He, you know, needed money, and I just felt like, well, I ought to give it to him. And so I gave it to him, and you know what else I gave him? I gave him a good little sermon. I said, look, this is God's money. And if you spend it on drugs, alcohol, tobacco, whatever, I don't remember what I told him. I probably told him he'd be in trouble. God's going to get him. I'm not sure what all I told him. But you know what hit me then? I'm going to look over here a little more because then I thought about how easy it is to go to Bass Pro and spend a lot of $20 bills. And I forgot all about that sermon that I just told that man. Huh? You get the point. Young people, you live in very different times than your grandparents did. My parents and Sarah's parents were raised, they lived during the Depression. And I know that had an effect on us. But these people, our parents, lived through hard times. The Depression was, and just almost 100 years ago, not long ago, at least 100 years doesn't sound near as long now as it did to me when I was a little boy, but it wasn't long ago. There were very hard times. Food was scarce. There was little money. You didn't waste anything. You traded with your neighbors and sometimes went hungry. And that was the time my dad was 11 years old and he had to leave home. They didn't have enough food and clothes, and that's another long story, and I can't go there without crying hardly. But that's how bad things were. And times have changed so much, and there's lots of food and there's lots of money. And then we have the credit cards that help us buy the things we can't afford and buy the things we don't need with money that we don't have. So I tell you, young people, don't get in that credit card trap. Be stewards of what. Use number two. You remember what number two was that we talked about? discipline. Use number two and save your money, and then buy what you need. I'm amazed with how much money young people make nowadays. But you know what amazes me again? I'll be talking more to y'all later, but right now it's kind of over on this side. I'm amazed more when I look at a little house and a piece of property that you're going to need one day for that little bride that you want, and how much money you're going to need. And I'm just telling you, if now when you're making the money and you can shell through it like a butter bean and it's gone and you don't have any savings, you're a long ways from ready to take on a wife and family and doctor bills and all of those things. Be stewards. What about using money for the honor and glory of God, for His kingdom? Oh, we are blessed so much, and there's so many places like famine in Sudan right now, and Cuba is in, Cam, some of you probably read that, how awful things are. And here we are with so much, and so I'm burdened about this. We're in a throwaway society. Anybody been to a shoe repairman lately? We used to go get our shoes fixed because we could still wear them for months if we just got that man to sew them up a little bit. Any of you young girls wore dresses that were made out of flour sacks? You didn't even know they did it, did you? My mother, I wished I would have recorded her giving the story of how they'd get the old flour sacks and how they'd have to beat all the flour dust and all the process of boiling lye water, and they would get them to, I think it was about any shade of gray you wanted to make their dresses. That's what they used. That's where they got their material. I'm just telling you, things are so different. Patches on our jeans, hand-me-downs. I wonder how many of you are wearing clothes that your older brother had one day or sister and it was given down. I'm just saying, young people, learn to be frugal and use your resources wisely, and don't waste. Don't set your standard of living by what you can afford. And probably I need to talk this one all the way to the back of the church. Don't set your standard of living by what you can afford. In our society, in our economy, it's an unusual time. But let's use our money for kingdom interests. Discipline yourself and use wisely what God has given. Remember, it's His. And along with that, I want to stress that you learn the joy of giving. The joy of giving. You know, when you give for a cause, and somebody's in need and you give, don't give till it hurts. I forget, was it Randy Alcorn or as Kathy Truett or one of those that said it? Don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. So when you can give and you help somebody, and it's actually it's just a good feeling to be able to help. Okay, that was stewardship. We had respect, discipline, steward. The fourth one is take responsibility. And when you were born, you were totally not responsible. And as you grew, your parents tried to help you take responsibility. You got to a place where when you made a mess, you needed to clean it up. And young people, you're at the age and stage of life where you need to let it soak in that you are responsible. You can't blame your bad conduct on anybody else. You get in a vehicle and drive like crazy, you will be in trouble. Don't blame it on somebody else and they told you this and whatever other goes along with that. You go places and do things you shouldn't, you're responsible. And I always like to give a word to the parents, and don't stick up for your children when they put the blame on somebody else when they are wrong. That will always hinder growth and produce weaklings instead of men and women. You are responsible. But taking responsibility has a positive side to it as well. It realizes the privileges you have. I would imagine most of you have your driver's license. That's a privilege. It's not a right. It's a privilege you have. And so if you want to keep the privilege, then use it right. Do your part. If you like to go with the youth, well, then behave and you'll keep the privilege. It's just that simple, isn't it? Taking responsibility has a positive side. Another little part to think about on responsibility I want to talk about briefly. You know, our churches are 4029 exempt. Why are we exempt? We told the government, and actually we didn't start it, but our Amish brothers got it approved years ago. And they told the government that we would take care of our elderly, we would take care of the handicapped, those that are disabled, we'll take care of our sick. And it saves about 15% of your paycheck. And that's a sizable, I was thinking through it a little bit, if you make an average wage in that 15%, and by the end of the year, that's a good hunk of change. Okay, now what will you do with that money? Well, then a little bit later, the mandatory health insurance came along, and the government said, well, if you're 4029 exempt, then you can take care of yourself, and that'll save you a single young man, I'm not even sure, but I would guess it'll save you no less than around $400 if you can get an insurance policy for $400, let me know. So if you put that on top with the savings on top of what you're saving with not paying Social Security, you see what's happening. And the question is, two things, what will you do with that money? And I know what the temptation is. One is to increase our lifestyle, the level of our living. Will we raise our standard of living? Maybe buy a nicer car, buy more toys, and be the coolest young man on the road because, we have the money to do it. And then there's one other thing that I'm concerned about. What happens Sunday morning when we take up the offering and the plate comes around and we have a need to take care of our elderly, we have a need for sickness and so on. What happens? Now, the nice thing about coming here, and I don't know y'all, I don't know what you give and you, but I'm just telling you, I want you to think about it next time there's an offering. Next time you hear that, you know what, the brethren, somebody needs to put this money, and you think about the money that you're saving, that we agreed, okay, we'll use of that for that, and make sure you do your part. Be responsible. All right, number five is to be an honest, trustworthy, hard worker. We talked about respect, discipline, steward, and being responsible. Number five is be an honest, trustworthy, hard worker. Proverbs 12, 22 says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Proverbs 12:24 says, the hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor. And I think it a good thing that in general, I think that our people, we have taught, we have emphasized, our youngsters have learned that we need to be hard workers, we need to tell the truth, we can't be slackers. But as I tell you, you won't get far in life without being a hard worker. Hard work and sweat is a result of man's fall way back in the garden. But I don't believe work is a necessary evil. It is good for us to work, all of us, both sides. It's good for us to work. Most of it, I think, is our attitude about work. And without being a hard worker and honesty and being trustworthy, we will not get far in life. I can pretty much size up a man by watching him walk. I have a nephew that's in construction work, and he said, I can watch a man walk, and I'll tell you whether I'm going to hire him or not. You know what I mean? Do I need to demonstrate because you don't know? But if you see somebody walking and they're just shuffling along, it looks like they don't have a lick of energy for anything. What kind of man do you think that would be on the job? You think he'd hustle and keep going and work? I know. Anyway. And our colleges today cannot teach, cannot produce these. I don't know of any course in college on honesty and trustworthy and being hard workers. In fact, the push to go to higher education is so that we can get easier jobs, so that we can sit in where it's cool all day and let somebody else that's not as smart as we are be out there and work. Our society is so short on these qualities. I'll assure you, if you learn these qualities, there will be in our society and economy, there's more work to do than you can get done. And without them, there you'll be a poor witness, a poor testimony of the gospel of Jesus. And number six is maturity. Maturity. Ephesians 4:15 says to grow up in every way into Christ. Young people, don't make decisions like you did when you were a child. And we talked a little about that. But as a child, we made decisions strictly by feelings, right? If somebody did something that we didn't like, if they grabbed our toy, if they pushed us over, make decisions by slow, careful consideration. Make mature judgments. Think through things. That's maturity. Don't act like children and then want to be treated as an adult. I don't know if I need to comment on that anymore. But I'll assure you, both sides, that if you act like an adult, you won't need to remind your parents that you're not a little baby anymore. You get the point. If you make wise choices, you will be trusted. Make wise choices and you'll be trusted. We have a young man in our congregation. Many of you know him. And he was just recently was sent over by CAM, him and another man, to check out in, I think it was Sudan, to check out some things there, some of CAM's programs. And while he was there, he was robbed in the motel room. Somebody came in and just cleaned him out. Their computer, cell phones, money, paperwork, cleaned him out. But you know, the whole time we were praying for him at home, but you know, nobody was worried about this man, this young man. Would he get in trouble over there? Would he do something he shouldn't? You see, we learned to trust him for years. He's trustworthy. And that's the way it is. If you live a godly life, you will be trusted. If you make wise choices, you will be trusted. So come to maturity. I've seen in my lifetime some very immature things from young people, and I just believe that this group of young people is far above some of the things that I've seen, like squealing tires away from the churchyard and spinning up the gravel around the church or driving fast. Maturity, grow up. Always, you know, think I have to be the one talking and want to be noticed, want the attention on me. Grow up. So I encourage you, young people, don't worry about being accepted in the cool group and needing to do all the latest and the greatest so that others think highly of you. I want to tell you, guard your character. Sometimes people try to protect their reputation, and that's futile. Reputation is what people think you are, and I'm just not going to worry about that. But if I am concerned about what I really am, then what people think will take care of itself. So have your interest, young people, on what you really are in your heart. Keep Jesus the drive of your life, all your energy to bring glory to God, and you'll attract the kind of friends that will help you in your quest for life. And I want to mention, too, about thinking maturely about a life's companion. And until you're thinking about a special friend as a companion, thinking about a companion for life, then you're either too young or too immature or both to be thinking about a special friendship. But think maturely about it. Maybe I should just say here, because sometimes people ask about the age of marriage, and I'm not going to put a specific number to it. I don't believe there is a right number to put on it. But I believe, young men, that when you're ready to take the responsibility of marriage and family, then you're old enough. If you're just looking for a life of fun without children, without family, you just want to have this girl by your side so you can have more fun, then you're not ready for it. I'll let it at that. Think maturely about a companion. I'll talk directly to the girls a little bit. Don't let your emotions drive you and show immaturity when looking for a man. Happy is the young girl who looks with appreciation at qualities in men that would make a good husband, rather than looking for a handsome someone to charm you and fill your emotional tank. And I'll just say it briefly here. Sometimes as young people, we think that there is either a young man out there somewhere that could just fill me up, give me everything I ever wanted, or there's some girl over out somewhere that would just completely, fill my needs. And you'll never find that in anyone. The fullness in your heart has to be filled with Christ first. Now, okay, back to the subject. Look for qualities that would make a good husband. And girls, look for a thoughtful man. Look, a man that is thoughtful. He thinks of others. A man that has manners. Notice a man that has patience. A man that's sensitive. A man that has compassion. A responsible person. Look at the character, the quality of a homebody. A young man who enjoys his family. And another one along with that, and where his younger siblings love him. I think that tells so much when you see a young man and his young siblings love him. It tells a lot about that man. Look for a man who manages his money. We've talked about that. And last but not least, probably the most important, look for a man who loves his mother. Because one day, this man will treat his wife basically the same way that he did his mother. Okay, young men, look for young girls who have qualities that will make a good wife. Look for a young girl that's not consumed with herself. And you know what I mean, just someone that, it just seems like all over just wants to, it's about me. Look for one who is a blessing to others. Maybe one who's okay to be a baby maid, to go help another sister that has had a baby and needs help, and blessings to the girls who are willing to do that. Look for a young lady who loves her siblings and her family, who has a quiet spirit. Look for a young lady that's frugal. You know, it seems like women can throw it out the back door faster than the men can bring it in. There's that possibility. I thank God for a wife that if I make it first, she makes it last. My mother used to tell us that you need to watch a girl peel potatoes. And if she cuts them real thick, wastes a lot of potatoes, going down the road. The point is, look for one that's frugal, a hard worker. Look for a girl that has learned sweet submission. And last but not least, one that loves her father. Because the love and respect she has for her father will probably be about at the same level it will be for you one day. Remember, marriage is not based on popularity, brains, money, or looks. And so I encourage you, be mature when you make consideration, when you think. Number 7 is to keep a pure heart and mind. Keep a pure heart and mind. Jesus said, "For out of the abundance of the heart, or the mind, the mouth speaketh." And whenever the mind begins to dwell on anything that's away from God, there will be a growing hunger for anything that feeds that lower nature. Whenever your mind goes away from God, that increases the hunger for things that will take you away from God. And so I have two things that I want to talk about briefly on this. And one of them is music. Be careful of these two things that feed the lower appetite. And music is one of them. And I wish you could all read the book, Why I Don't Listen to Christian Contemporary Music by Shelley Garlock Hamilton. She was the daughter of Frank Hamilton, Frank Garlock, I mean. And he was from the 60s, and that was the time that Christian rock came in, and it was in a lot of the nominal churches, and he stood up against it, and he wrote against it, he preached against it, and he got cast out because of it. Well, his daughter now has written a book about the Christian contemporary music movement, and that explains it a lot better than I can, that book. But music shows what is on the inside. Music shows what is on the inside. The defining line of good music and bad music is that good music will draw us closer to God, and bad music takes us away from God. It stirs the evil emotion in us, and that rebellion, it will feed that rebellion in a person. Music today is not restful. You remember the beginning of the message? The music today is not restful. Music today unclothes. And music today puts you out of your right mind. I'm talking about the evil, the bad music of today. Puts you out of your right mind. And if you read, if you don't take it for what I say, but read people who have studied it and what some of the authors, even of bad music, what they say about their music and what it's supposed to do and what it does. Music is a moral issue. The amount of good music in the secular world is really, really small. I just had an advertisement the other day for a streaming service, and they were talking about 100 million songs. And I want to tell you, the amount of good songs on that is very small. And I would be very cautious. I don't even think we should allow those secular companies to define the gospel that we listen to. If you read over, our decrees, and it was well thought through and taught. And I fear that when that changed several years ago, basically what we heard is we can have instruments. But there's a lot more in there than that. The type of singers that we listen to. I just plead with the young people to to be careful of the music that you listen to. Christian CCM is irregular rhythm, irregular poetry, extreme repetition. I worship you, I worship you, I worship, and so on. The focus is so much on ourself, and it's so much of profession and performance. And the music leaders, they will get their program, music program ready for next Sunday, because it just whips everybody up. I'm sure you with me have watched clips where it was some beautiful music. And, you know, it goes back over the audience. And you can see people that are so much in violation with Christian principles. And they've got this deep look of worship on their face and tears running down their cheeks. All that moves us, doesn't it? We'd say, well, if they can worship like that, if they're that close to God, you see what it does for us? I think we should do more of our own singing. Okay, number two, the books you read and the podcasts you listen to, the e-books. And much of what I said about music can be applied right here as well. Fill your minds with things that move us toward God. We don't need fillers. And young girls, you don't need romance novels. They will not give you a realistic expectation of what you're going to get one day. I don't care who you get. If you read those romance novels, you build up an expectation that will never be filled. We had a neighbor lady live down the road from us years ago, and she was in her 80s, even she lived up to be about mid-90s. She would sit out on the porch reading those romance novels. Had a horrible marriage. They lived together. It wasn't in style to divorce back then. So they just existed together. But she'd sit out on the porch reading those romance novels, trying to find what she never got. Don't read them. And I want to tell you another thing yet about books. I'm just amazed at how many books we have to read nowadays that are good books. Pick up the CAM catalog or Christian Light or Sermon on the Mount publishers. And there's more books than you can get read. When Sarah and I were young, books were few by Christian publishers. Today there's many. What I'm saying is, we don't need to just fill our minds with just fillers. I think we need to fill our minds with things that will build. Okay, number eight. Stand on the principles of the Word. And I told you already about how drastically things have changed, how the pressure of society is different ways on you than it is was on us back when we were young. If a man and woman lived together without getting married, it was a shame. You just talked about it that way. And if somebody had a baby out of wedlock, it was not good at all. It was very much a shameful thing. And divorce was very rare. I remember the first time in our community, man down the road, still remember his name, and he had some really, really hard knocks in life. But he divorced his wife, and the whole community was just shocked. We were just couldn't believe it. And sometime later, he wanted the preacher of the local Baptist church to remarry him, and Preacher Page says, no, we'll not do it, not right. This was just in my lifetime. Can you imagine? So I'm telling you, things have changed somewhat. Home units back then were much stronger. We went to public school. I went to public school through the eighth grade, and it was the home units, you could just tell, were much stronger. We knew nothing of mixing genders, nothing at all. And today, you know where the morals are. Young people, you're going to need to stand on the principles of the Word of God. Know what you believe. Read your Bible and decide this is what you want. You want to be a part of the kingdom of Christ. Don't get accustomed to the evils of society. It's still wrong to live together before marriage. Fornicators are still going to hell unless they repent. Keep yourself pure till marriage. Learn to put off the lust of the flesh while you're young, because you will always need to do this. You will always need to put off the lust of the flesh. So I say, keep a pure courtship. And may I say, even a hands-off courtship. And I'm going to tell you why. And I don't have a pen up here, but that's okay. I can tell you. If I did it, I'd draw a circle. And I'd write in that circle, rightful pleasures. You see, God made things that are rightful for each one of us, rightful pleasures. And I want to tell you right here that the devil never invented a pleasure. Think about it. He always takes what God made was good. He takes it and he twists it and corrupts it and then offers it back. God didn't invent the pleasure. God made pleasures that are right for us. And yes, and whatever is on the outside of that circle of what's rightful is forbidden pleasures. And that's what we call lust. When the desire to go from what's rightful and go out into the forbidden. And I want to tell you, you will always have that. It's easy to think, well, and yeah, when you get married, you think, well, yeah, this circle is going to get a lot bigger. But you will always have to say no to your flesh. Your flesh will always cry out for things that are not right to have. And so I'm preaching pure courtship because I'm going to ask you a question. How much lust can you feed and get by with it? How much lust should we feed? Not even a hint. Not even a hint. Your lust will never be satisfied. So if you decide you can take liberties as a young couple and you can, you know, your flesh is calling, you can do a little bit, when is it going to be satisfied? And so soon, your courtship will turn away from anything constructive and where you can have deep conversations because you're busy following passions. So I know this is straight talk. Young girls, if your friend cannot prove to you that he has learned how to control the passions of his flesh in courtship, I would never trust him in marriage. It's easy for young girls to think this man loves me so much is why he can't stop following his passions. And I want to tell you, it's not about you. A man could follow his passions after anybody if he lets them go. And I believe you will do him and yourself a favor to make him prove that he loves you so much he can be in private with you and respect your dignity and purity. And if boundaries are not kept in place and passions kept in check, very soon the courtship will become physical based and there will be a serious lack in deep conversations with reasoning and understanding where we really learn to know each other, and you will enter marriage ill prepared. Keep good reserve. Let your picture show that without a doubt you will be pure, and I'll assure you you'll never be sorry. I haven't found a couple yet that got married and down the road that said, I wish we'd have taken a few more liberties before we got married. Nobody, there's nobody says that. And I want to say one more word yet to the dads. Do I still have a little bit more time? Oh, okay. I want to talk to the dads just a little bit while we're on this subject. Dads, you need to help your daughters. You need to protect them. And I still believe strongly that the young man needs to come to your daughter through you. See, I was raised from the era, my parents were both born into Amish homes, and there was a journey. But back then, when you turned 16, I know we just can hardly comprehend it, but when you turned 16, that's when you could get a girl and take her to the singing, and you started dating, and once you got serious with somebody, then you called it, you were going steady. But until then, you could take one girl tonight, and the next thing, and you could get another girl. That's just where we came from. That's the history. So you didn't go through the dads. What I'm saying, in my lifetime, this has changed, and some people, there's some people that don't like this, that think of the young man that needs to come back through the dad, and I don't want us to lose it. You need to protect your daughter. She's your daughter. She doesn't belong to anybody else. And if somebody else is going to take her to be a wife, you better know who he is and what he is and his moral purity. And it's not your daughter's place to go ask him if he's morally pure. It'd be completely out of place for her. So who's going to? All right, Dad, that's your job. I want to ask you one other question just to let you think about it. If a man came to you to ask for your daughter and he was an alcoholic, what would you do? How long would he need to be free of that? If he, well, I didn't drink for a month. Would you be good with it? So, well, I didn't drink for 2 months. Would you be good with it? What about 6 months? And I'm not putting a date on it. I'm just getting you to think. I was an alcoholic, but it's been 6 months. It's been a year. What about if he was addicted to pornography? How long would it take? And I want to ask you one more question. Which is the most addictive? All right, dads, your job. Number 9, the last one, choose to forgive. Young people, you're going to need to choose to forgive. I am sure you are pretty much normal, young people. And I'm sure there's some things in your life that have been hard to deal with. Right? And you need to decide, will I forgive or will I hold a grudge? It is just that simple. Will I let it go? Claim the blood of Christ, put it behind me, move forward in the joy of the Lord, serving the Lord. But I'm going to tell you, your battles will not become less. Maybe you think when you get that sweet little bride, boy, that everything is just going to be, you know, we're going to live happily ever after. No, that won't fix it. And if you don't get a bride, the things in your life, your battles will continue to come and will not become less. None of us, young people, get a hold of it, that none of us will be handed a really nice platter all strewn with flowers and you know, where there are just roses on our path and an easy life, and where, you know, we're going to have a sweet little home, and you're going to have a baby and then another one and everything. No, there will be difficult things. I confess right here that I always, when I go to a wedding, I get this little pit down here. Everybody looks so happy. That's good, isn't it? I don't want somebody coming to a wedding and looking like you lost your best friend. But I can't help but think how many weddings I've been to and then it didn't work out, where everything was so happy and smiles, and so soon the smiles were gone and the troubles came and wrong decisions were made and there was chaos in the home. So I'm saying, young people, I'm getting kind of cluttered here on my thoughts, but all this to say, you're going to have decisions to make. You're going to have hard things. And along the way, whether it's to a companion or the workplace or the neighbor or whoever, you're going to need to learn to forgive. That's, get back to this point. You're going to need to learn to forgive. There's the pain from relationships. You're going to face it over and over, and you can either forgive or nurse that bad attitude. And you can accept the hard thing in your life as from God and then grow by it. Or you can stumble around and over it and nurse bad attitudes and grudges and bring your life into misery and bondage. That's what happens when we keep stumbling over those bad attitudes and grudges. Our life just continues to get more and more miserable, and we get into bondage and misery and negativity and lose our joy. And we come to the end of life bitter and distressed from all the hardships of life. Or again, you can learn to use these things as building blocks. And yes, smile through the tears, knowing that Jesus is with you, and show the sweetness and radiance that comes from a forgiving and loving heart. I don't know, but that maybe that's one of the most important ones on this paper, is choose to forgive. Yes, commit yourself to the Lordship of Jesus every day. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your path. May God bless you, young people. I hope you have. We have a bright future with God. And if you, I'll assure you, if you take God's way and in all your ways acknowledge Him, He will care for you through life. And I believe you can come to old age and see that God has been good and He's blessed you so much. But we must take His way. God bless you.